Live from the biggest small town in America.
This is WGN Chicago, radio home of millions throughout mid-America.
And radio, well, radio became the Pied Piper to a strange new world.
Time to climb up on our big shoulders and get inside our massive heart.
This is the Saturday Night Special with Amy Guth.
720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth. You heard the woman. Thanks so much for joining us tonight on the Saturday Night Special. I am honored you would spend your time with us after with all the many, many things to do in this fine city. My friends, you know, this is the show where we explore topics a little bit deeper than we can during the week. We kind of unpack them. We pick the one topic and we really, really let it unfold throughout the night. And we've picked many different topics on the show, and some controversial, some fun, some both of those things. But tonight we're going to talk about something very, very controversial, perhaps one of the most controversial topics that face us right now. And We're entering into tonight's show with the goal of holding a well-rounded, very bipartisan, inclusive, thoughtful, respectful of all respectful discussion. We're looking to talk tonight about guns because while arms have been part of the American narrative since the start for hunting, sport, and self-defense, there's no denying that we are in a country that is in a crisis. Look at any U.S. news organization's headlines, and certainly headlines in and about our Chicago. And the data associated with gun-related fatalities and injuries, it is out of control, and I think we all know it. And the problem is, as we start to have conversations around guns, we have one conversation about the right to have the weapons, and then we have another conversation about the safety and about lives. And those are two different conversations. And what happens is both sides kind of dig in their heels and then start yelling, and we don't get anywhere. And when we have a mass shooting is when we all start talking about it. And we say, someone's got to do something. This has to change. And then the news cycle quiets down and it's replaced by something else and we move on. And so we don't even get a chance to have a meaningful dialogue that gets us anywhere, that really, really digs in and that is constructive and useful. So that's what we're aiming to do tonight, because what we need is thoughtful dialogue from all sides of the gun discussion. And more than anything, we need voices in the discussion who are willing to work for solutions and foster that very constructive conversation rather than, you know, just declare parts of the conversation right or wrong and shut down. We have to enter into these conversations assuming that everybody, we have to give people the benefit of the doubt, that people are moral and intelligent and are standing up for what they believe in. And if we all enter with that in mind about the other sides and the other points of view, maybe we will get further. So tonight I've convened a panel of people with a very, very, very different, grouping of points of view on this topic. And we'll meet them here in a minute. But before we meet them, I want to tell you that I'm not just going to facilitate this conversation. I want to tell you that I too have a bit of a complicated relationship with guns myself. And I think, you know, regular listeners know that I'm a little bit left of left on most things, but you know what? I have to tell you that I was not allowed to take my driver's test when I was a teenager until my parents were not letting me do this, until I could shoot the paper villain and hit the paper villain in the face and in the chest and in the crotchal region. And I don't really know why. I didn't really understand. I think the idea was my parents thought if I ever had a gun away from somebody that I could defend myself. And I grew up in a house with a gun in it. In fact, with more than one gun in it. And I knew it was there, and I never handled it. I didn't exactly know where it was, but I knew it was there. And I heard comments about it being for home protection. And I've fired a weapon before, and I know what that feels like. And in fact, just about a year or two ago, I drove my mom on a trip. I went and picked her up and drove her to some of her relatives in another state. And I realized shortly after setting out on our drive that she had a handgun with her. And that was complicated. That was really complicated. And I wasn't comfortable with it being there in the front with me. And so I go into this conversation the first to admit that it is not a black and white discussion. It's really, really not. It is really not just yes or no. There are many, many complex and nuanced things to it. And I will be the first to admit that. And so I'm here telling you that as I'm having this conversation, as I tend to be a little bit left of left, people I love own guns. And I bet in any family, there are people with many points of view on this topic too. And so although I grew up in a house with weapons and knew about them and in fact have fired a weapon, it's not something that I chose to follow as an adult. And so it's complicated, right? I think it's complicated for a lot of people. So that's what we're going to talk about tonight. And we're going to do so with empathy and respect. And of course, we're taking calls 312-981-7200. But again, the goal here tonight is a thoughtful and constructive conversation. And so throughout the night, we'll be breaking this apart into many different issues. And so I hope you'll stick around for that. All right, I'm going to go get my panelists. We're going to take a little break. And when we come back, we're going to talk all about this on 720 WGN. WGN. Hey, it's the Saturday Night Special. I'm Amy Gu. Thanks for being with us this evening. We are tackling a really big, big topic tonight. We're talking all about guns, and that is a very polarizing topic. But you know what? There's a lot of nuances to it. And I think when we talk about this topic, what we often do is we talk about rights, and then we talk about safety and violence, and then we don't get anywhere, because we're having two different arguments. So I have convened an esteemed panel this evening of people who have really interesting points of view on this very topic. So let me turn a bunch of microphones on and introduce everybody, and let's get this conversation started. So I'm joined by Damani Boden, who is a spokesperson for Mothers Against Senseless Killing, MASC, as we like to say. So let me turn your microphone on. And I also am here with Joe O'Sullivan, a retired police commander and former blogger. He's worked a variety of jobs. He's done security, executive protection, investigations, public, private sectors. Follow him. He's at Joe the Cop. Lots of people tweeting tonight in the studio. Also here is Andy McIntosh, who's the co-founder of Salt Supply, a really, really interesting and innovative product as we talk about home security and home protection, personal protection. It's a very different take on that conversation and that whole narrative around that perhaps we have not considered. So Andy McIntosh is here, and Dr. Gerard McClendon is here. He's an Emmy Award-winning talk show host, professor, and author. He hosts Counterpoint on Lakeshore Public TV. All right, everybody's microphone is on. So let me ask you this. As we think about guns, and there's so much data out there, and it's hard to say it exactly, because simply there are so many weapons in this country we don't know about, in fact, right? There's weapons that are not registered. There are lost, or quote unquote lost, right? I'm going to do air quotes, lost. You know, there's stolen, there's things that have fallen apart, there's things like that. There's a lot of data we don't have, but right now it's estimated there's around 300 million. But there's some, I think it was The Guardian that said that there's in fact more guns than people in the United States right now. They put it at about 317 million people and about 350 million guns, which is shocking. But you think about it, while not every household has a gun, a lot of people that have guns have more than one. So there's that. So that's a lot. And when we look at that by country, it's even more interesting, because 2014 data suggests that in this country, there was 112.6 guns per 100 residents. The next country down was Cyprus, that had 69.7. And after that, it goes 54% in Yemen. And then it's way under that. Nothing else is even close to 50%. And so it's a really interesting data set. And if we look at the breakdown of people who have concealed carry permits in different states, different countries, there's a lot of different ways to slice that data and interpret it and that kind of thing. But before we step into the heavy data, I want to ask you each a question that might be very personal. And I want to ask this because we all in this room have many different thoughts on this very complex subject. And so the question I have for you is, what is the formative event that shaped your opinion on guns? Joe, I'd like to start with you. Whoops, I'm going to turn your mic on and everything. There we go.
I could give a couple of different answers. And one is I didn't grow up in a gun household. And I never handled a gun until I joined the Army in 1983. And so I think that my formative experiences with guns was when I was in the military service. And then later on when I decided to become a police officer. And it didn't really, wasn't even really a conscious thought on my part. I just became so used to seeing them as a tool and something that was just in my life every day. And,
sure.
And I've pretty much been surrounded by people with those same ideas.
Definitely. Gerard, what about you?
You know, it was October 2009. I was doing my talk show at CLTV WGN. I was in the WGN newsroom, and I get a phone call from my wife. She said, drop the phone. She said, you need to come home right now. And I said, what are you talking about? Because I'm a workaholic. You know, you need to come home right now. She's like, well, give the phone to Jerry Riles, your producer. And I give the phone to Jerry. Jerry says, Gerard, just talk to your wife. I got to take you to the WGN. We went out to the parking lot at WGN. He goes, Gerard, the elderly couple who was found dead in the forest preserve, those were your parents. So at that moment, I became like this spokesperson for whether it was anti-guns, whether it was anti-crime, whether it was forgiveness. I instantly became that spokesperson, you know, and I was very angry, still angry for a long time, but I realized I had to forgive. What I found through that experience, though, is that the soul of man for a lot of people is gone. If we get rid of guns, people are still going to be violent. If we change laws, people are still going to be violent. Until you can get to the soul of man, nothing is going to change.
Mm. Very powerful story. Andy, what about you?
So I actually did grow up in a gun household. I actually went through hunter safety training. My dad and I had some great memories. We still actually go and duck hunt with my grandfather, my uncle. Looked at guns as something that was a sporting tool, really in the sense of a tool. Counterpoint to that is my wife and I bought a house in Humboldt Park in 2014 and moved in, and within about a month, a young man was shot and killed on the street that we live on. And after that point, you know, until then, we really didn't consider safety, our own personal safety or security, as being one of the top priorities. Of course, we think about it, but it wasn't something we considered a security system to be enough. That was enough. And I traveled a lot at the time in my job. I didn't want to get a dog for that reason. And my neighbor and I just started talking, and we just started saying, we're not ready to bring a firearm into our homes. We're just not ready to do that right now.
So what do we do?
What is the option that we have?
Right.
And that queued up SALT.
Yeah, interesting. Donnie, what about you?
Like most people, grew up seeing guns on television, but growing up in Chicago, you know, very heavily legislated against guns historically, well, at least for my lifetime, and there were no guns in my household. I didn't see one until a friend had one, and me and my buddies took it from him. Like, no, you can't have a gun. That was in high school. I got exposed to them when I went to college away from Chicago. There was a gun store and a gun range, and I wanted to try it out, and I did, and I liked it. And it seemed like something more of a recreation at the time.
Were you hunting or like at a shooting range?
Just at a shooting range.
Okay.
Never went hunting, always wanted to, but you know. Never got the chance, never had friends that wanted to go hunting.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, in my adult life, I've gotten more or exposed myself to it more. And then the laws relaxed a little bit here in Chicago and Cook County. So access is are more open to owning them. So I've taken advantage of that. But there's a duality here because of the crime we have.
Certainly.
In Chicago. You know, I realize that everybody doesn't feel the same way I do about guns, as if it's a recreation or can be used to maybe go hunting, although I've never done it. It can be a problem and has been a problem here in Chicago, something that we at MASC have been looking to address.
Indeed. All right, my friends, we're going to take a little break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the issues and the different narratives and the misconceptions when we have the gun debate. What are all those topics that come up? We're going to talk about them one by one with all of the minds in the studio, because as you just heard, there's a lot of powerful stories in the room right now and a lot of different perspectives. And so we're going to talk about this very complex gun debate, the quote unquote gun debate. We're going to talk all about it and gun crime and all of those things. We're going to talk about them all when we come back here in just a bit on 720 WGN. Winnable 720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth, and this is the Saturday Night Special. And tonight, we are talking all about guns. It is a very complicated topic, and it's a topic that we're quick to say is very polarizing, because indeed it is, but it's not so black and white. There's a lot of details swirling around it, and there's a lot of considerations, and there's a lot of things to discuss. And so tonight, we have assembled an esteemed panel. Damani Bowden is here he is a spokesperson for Mothers Against Senseless Killing. Joe Sullivan, he is a retired police commander and former blogger. He is here. Andy McIntosh, who's the co-founder of Salt Supply, he is here. And Dr. Gerard McClendon, who is here. You know him. He's the host of Counterpoint on Lakeshore Public TV. So we're all here, and we have many different points of view happening in the room right now. So I want to talk now about when people talk about the quote unquote gun debate. What happens is, we all know, people, one group will say something about rights. Someone else will say something about home protection, and someone else will say something about, but look at the headlines, think of safety, think of all of those things, think of people, look at the fatalities. And then the conversation kind of stops. In your minds, what are the biggest issues when we say the gun debate? What does your mind go to right away? And where are those in your mind? What is the gun debate? Let's see, Andy, you started off.
So, at its essence, the way that we look at it, and you know, some of my co-founder and I have had endless discussions on this idea. At its essence, it's about safety and it's about security. On both sides of the debate, they actually have, almost ironically, the same point, which is they want to have a safe and they want to have a secure home. They want to have safety. They want to be able to protect themselves in all environment on the gun debate side. But on the anti-gun side, obviously, it's about safety and security. To us, the way we look at it is it's not necessarily, I mean, it is a social problem, but it's a social problem that arises from a technology problem. The technology of a gun is designed to stop another person, to take somebody down, to injure or kill that person. That technology, in many cases, is the wrong technology for 99.9% of use cases. Many of the use cases that we would say that a gun owner would actually have is, I'm defending my house, I'm defending my spouse, I'm defending my kids. In those cases, do you actually want to kill or seriously harm or injure an invader? At the essence, do you really want to take that person down? Or if there was a technology available that allowed you to not necessarily kill or injure that person, but just take them down, incapacitate them, okay? We're talking set your phasers to stun.
Right, which is where Salt Supply, that was kind of the genesis for Salt Supply. And give your website out, because it's a really interesting product that... It's saltsupply.com, right?
Saltsupply.com.
It's really interesting. So it is a gun that looks like a gun and fires something like a bullet, but it's more like a pepper spray, proprietary kind of pepper spray that will sort of be suspended in the air. So if your child finds it and shoots him or herself, it's not going to kill them. It's going to be like a paintball. It's going to hurt them, and they're going to regret doing so, it sounds like, but it's not going to kill them. So it's an interesting take. And your business partner, your co-founder, was on the show with me a few months ago on the Business Lunch show, and he was describing the plan in his household. Should there be an intruder, should the alarm go off, the plan was to shoot the bottom step. And that way you have a few minutes of a pepper spray wall that no one's going to run through while the cops are there. And I asked him, well, what about in the wrong hands? You know, any weapon can go into the wrong hands. What are you going to do if someone takes this on a bus or something? He said, honestly, I can't wait for that day, because it's going to be a day that someone is doing a criminal act, but no one's going to be killed that day. No one's going to lose their lives. It's going to burn their eyes. It's going to be like being maced, and they're going to have a bruise on them like a paintball, but no one's going to get killed from this weapon, which I think is really interesting. Gerard, what about you? What are the central issues to you in the gun debate?
I think the polarization, that's what bothers me the most. You know, when you say that you're a gun rights activist and you have to have as many guns as you can have in your household or on your property as the government would allow you to have, that's problematic. When you also start saying that I can have the biggest and largest guns on my property, I can have assault weapons on my property, that's problematic. Now, if you want to hunt, fine, you know, but you don't hunt rabbits and geese with AKs, you know, with Uzis. You just simply don't. And so I find that polarizing and very problematic. I don't have a problem with people having guns. I really don't. But it's a self-defense factor. Mm-hmm. And it's not just, you know, I'm protected by my constitutional rights. Therefore, you can't tell me what to have and what not to have. I find that problematic because then we're living in a society that's no longer free.
Right.
We're not living in a free society then if we always have to watch our backs. That's problematic. Do I want police to have weapons? Of course. Do I want security? Of course I want that. But when we always have to concentrate on that, that's problematic.
And I think, too, you know, we saw a lot of stories emerging shortly after the Obama administration took office. We saw a lot of stories emerging about like an uptick in gun sales. And it seems like that's the user we're talking about. People that were like, it's my right to have these weapons. I'm going to have a lot of them.
Yes. And what we find also is that those same activists, if other people, be it ethnicity or be it socioeconomical class, if they have those weapons, you don't see those same gun activists preaching their rights for the other people's rights. Case in point, you'll see a lot of gun activists who don't want African Americans to have guns in high numbers. I'm talking about legal guns mm-hmm. in high numbers. That becomes problematic, and which exacerbates the problem in Chicago. You know, guns coming across the state line from Indiana into Chicago, South Side, West Side, black folks killing each other because there's a lack of hope in a lot of these communities, you know, and a lot of that isn't on white people. It's not on gun activists. This is on black people who don't necessarily love themselves. That's a whole nother story, but it's still all a part of the powder keg of the 600, 700, 800 killings per year that are taking place right here in the city of Chicago.
And I think that that is an interesting point that I want to get to at length a little bit later in the mm-hmm. show, because I think sometimes when we talk about I don't mean the mass shootings. I mean the everyday shootings that we see in headlines on every news site in the city. Chicago is built to be a segregated city. Like it or not, it is. And it is built that way. And so I think there's some degree of quickly gun conversations and shooting conversations quickly become about class and race. Quickly, and we get away from the gun part of it. I think that happens a lot, and I want to get into that in a lot more detail. We're going to take a little break, and we come back. We're going to keep this conversation going and also talk a bit about how we're seeing these issues playing out in the political candidates' campaigns, because that is certainly something that is very much upon us. Back in just a bit on 720 WGN. WGN 720. It's a Saturday night special. I'm Amy Guth. Thanks so much for being with us tonight and spending your time with us. I appreciate you listening. However you're listening, WGNradio.com or on an app or the old-fashioned way through a radio. All right, tonight we're talking all about guns because there's a lot to talk about with this. And, you know, as I told people I was talking about this tonight, a lot of people cringe and said, oh, it's going to be a big fight. But that's not what we're doing tonight. We're having a thoughtful discussion, and I have assembled a panel of people with many different points of view on this topic and many different experiences that they bring to this conversation. I'm here with Dr. Gerard McClendon, Andy McIntosh, Joe O'Sullivan, and Damani Bowden. And we're having these conversations all about the issues surrounding the quote unquote gun debate, because often that, you know, that means something different to every person that you say it to. So right before we took a break, we heard from Gerard and we heard from Andy. But Joe, I believe you have a counterpoint to Gerard, perhaps.
Well, I wanted to expand on what Dr. McClendon said, and he mentioned the phrase polarization, I think, and it's one of the things There's been all sorts of stuff written lately about the increasing tendency of Americans to self-segregate along political lines, along ideology, along class. And you see all of that reflected in the argument about guns. And increasingly, with the gun debate, along with a lot of other debates, what you don't see is people actually engaging to try and figure out, mm-hmm. identify a problem and then work on a problem. What you see is people kind of screaming past each other, you know, screaming their talking points past opponents and viewing people with a different opinion as like an opponent who needs to be beaten,
right.
or proven wrong instead of somebody that needs to be engaged with. And along with that, when you talk about guns, I think that one of the biggest problems is we kind of conflate a couple of different issues. And the one is the issue of mass shootings. And then there's the issue when we say gun violence, especially in a city like Chicago, we think of the statistics we see every Monday morning when the news gives the body count mm-hmm. over the previous weekend. And these are really different issues. There's a phrase I came across a while ago, and it was called a wicked problem. And some social scientist came up with this. And a wicked problem, it's not a moral judgment, but it's just saying it's a social problem that is impossible or difficult to solve because there are so many moving parts. And all of the evidence can be contradictory. And if you look at the statistics that you see the different sides trot out with gun issues and the number of studies that are just constantly churning, it really gets to be a kind of a fog. And it's difficult for decent people to get through, you know, let alone how it gets manipulated by partisans.
Right. Definitely. And as we're in a political or as we're in an election year, rather, it's even murkier as it gets kind of tacked on with other issues. Certainly. Damani, from your point of view, what are the big issues surrounding when we say the gun debate? What comes up for you?
Well, I'll talk from the perspective of a MASC member.
Certainly.
We've attempted to address the issue a little bit differently. We've basically gone and embedded ourselves in a neighborhood that was, you know, wrought with violence and attempted to form relationships with people. We find that changing the consciousness of the person behind all of the acts that are going on behind the gun, as they say, has more of an effect on reducing the crime, the gun violence and things of that nature than, say, any type of legislation has. Legislation has been going on forever, you mm-hmm. know, decades, and it hasn't had a real effect, not a positive effect. There are still illegal guns flooding the streets. There are still, every Monday, like you said, people being shot, people being killed. These things are still happening because the consciousness of the people who are probably most vulnerable to some of the more negative aspects of our society, that's the problem. So we tried it out over the summer. It seemed to work. The violence in that area went down. The gun violence in that area went down. The crime overall went down in that immediate area.
And what kind of things did you do when you say, you know, you tried to troubleshoot that with the person behind the gun?
Well, we didn't lecture anyone. Mm-hmm. We went, like I said, we built relationships. You know, we talked to people about everyday things, gave them a lot of times things they didn't get from other people. One guy asked me, why do you come over here and do this? You know, like, because you're like my sons and my dads and, you know, cousins and uncles. It's like my family. And I want you guys to be better. And he was like, man, that's, you know, it struck him and it struck me that he was paying attention like that. Mm-hmm. And these are young men and young women now that want to be a part of the solution after one summer when before they were, you know, involved in the street life. Now they've changed their consciousness. Mm-hmm. We don't worry about this group of young men and young women, some are a little older, being as susceptible to the violence because we've kind of got them looking down a different path. This probably needs to be replicated not just in other areas in our city, but all across the country because we have a consciousness, as we've seen with Trump, there's mm-hmm. a consciousness in with a lot of his supporters that seems to be rather violent.
Yeah.
There's a consciousness in Chicago, and we see it that seems to be a little bit violent. We want to change that. The people behind the guns, whether or not you're on the, you know, pro-gun, anti-gun side, doesn't matter if the people are still suffering from whether it's mental illness, you know, poverty, disenfranchised.
Many issues.
There's a million issues. Yeah. And it all goes back and leads to people resorting to alternative means. Mm-hmm. And that is manifested a lot of times in gun violence. So.
Well, you bring up Trump, and I think that's, you know, we need to go check in with news here in just a little bit. But I do want to talk about that because, indeed, you know, issues are kind of the key, you know, that's the key for a political candidate, and it's an election year. And so we have candidates that are talking a lot about these issues. And some of them, I mean, you're campaigning. You're not necessarily there to dispel truth and knowledge for people. You're there to campaign and move them emotionally to take an action. And some of our candidates this go round are doing that in much bolder ways than others. And in fact, as you say, you know, we've seen some very violent things happening around Trump's campaigning and events that he's holding. And so as you're listening with the perspectives that you have, and I would throw this to the group, but as you're listening to the campaigning on all sides of that, what's really sticking out for you? Do you feel like it's all just kind of rhetoric in a campaign year or an election year? Or do you feel like there's somebody who's really, maybe we're not shining a light on in the right way, or maybe we're shining a light on in the very wrong way, but who's really talking about it in an interesting way?
Mm. You know what? Let me go back to Damani's point right mm-hmm. quick. I saw firsthand what that organization was doing. Mm-hmm. I would get off the Dan Ryan off of 63rd Street, cruise into the neighborhood, see what Damani, see what a Tamar, what they were doing. The pink shirts alone were making a statement, you know, because it basically was saying this is a safety zone. Children are here. The elderly are here. Everyone in this community deserves to live a carefree life, mm-hmm. you know, without gunshots. And you can see the whole tone and the whole body of the community, the countenance, the people's faces in the community after that 30, that 45 days start to change. So I want to compliment your organization for that. As far as a political year, it's always crazy in a presidential political sure. year. And what we find is that candidates, there's a psychological term called mimicry. So what candidates do is they mimic the crowd, and then the crowd mimics them, and then they mimic the crowd mimicking them. That's exactly what's happening at Trump rallies now. He doesn't say anything of substance, but he's mimicking the crowd. The crowd's mimicking him. So if he just says, I can shoot anyone on Fifth Avenue and my ratings will go up, and the crowd roars, that's the ultimate mimicry, satire, and absurdity.
That was an interesting example, because there have been so many times in his campaign in particular where people said, that's it, he's done. That's it, he's out. And that one in particular, because he pointed right at the camera. I mean, I flinched when I saw that. You know, he was pointing right at us, the viewer. And so many people said, oh, too far, too far. You can't do that. You know, Chicago doesn't have his back now. Whoa, that's, you know, we can't joke about guns here in this city. And yet,
yeah.
And yet, we all saw what happened in the Illinois primary. Yep. Not so much.
Citizen Kane. He's Citizen Kane.
Yep. He's the anti-politician. I mean,
it's really always about Trump. We can't go an hour on the station without talking about Trump.
That's right.
Well, we have just about a minute before we need to go check in with news. But is there anything from the Democratic candidates that any of you are hearing that sounds particularly interesting to you on this topic?
No. And I'll just expand on that. What I hear from Hillary Clinton and from Bernie Sanders has been sort of repeating what have become Democratic Party talking points, bringing back the assault weapons ban, limiting magazine size, going back to policies and not acknowledging that for all intents and purposes, this entire nation is now an armed camp, you know, with 300 to 350 million guns in circulation. For a candidate to go out, and it plays very well with Democratic core voters. They like hearing that. But the fact is those policies, I think, are really irrelevant to addressing the problems that we're talking about.
You can't quite unring a bell if there's 300 to 350 million, you know, guns.
Right.
In the city,
and
for sure.
There's studies that have shown that some of those things don't work. The assault weapons ban had no impact.
Right. Indeed. All right, my friends, we need to take a little break and then we'll get you to news and all that. But when we come back, I want to talk about the narratives that we have around mass shootings, around kind of one-on-one gun violence, and around other fatalities and injuries connected to guns, because there's a big swath of them that we do not talk about. So I want to talk about that when we come back. So stick around here on 720 WGN.
Chicago, radio home of millions throughout Mid-America.
Radio, well, radio became the Pied Piper to a strange new world.
Time to climb up on our big shoulders and get inside our massive heart.
This is the Saturday Night Special with Amy Guth.
720 WGN. You heard the woman. I'm Amy Guth, and this is the Saturday Night Special. Thanks for spending your time with us. I know you have lots of choices in this fine city, and I appreciate you tuning in. So tonight, my friends, we're talking all about guns, and it is, as I was telling people the topic for tonight, people made this face at me because they knew that is a really fraught topic. But what I've done is I've convened a panel here of people who have a lot to say on this topic from many different points of view and bring to the conversation a lot of different experiences through, you know, by which to filter those points of view. So I'm joined by Joe O'Sullivan, who is a retired police commander and former blogger, Andy McIntosh, who is co-founder of a product called Salt Supply, which is a home defense weapon, but it is not one that's going to kill people. And so it is kind of a re-engineering of the idea of a gun. And I'm going to let him tell you about a little more about that here in a minute. Dr. Gerard McClendon is here with us. He's an Emmy award winning talk show host. You know him from Counterpoint on Lakeshore Public TV. And Damani Bowden is here, who's a spokesperson for Mothers Against Senseless Killing. And so clearly, we have many different points of view in the room, and we're talking a lot about a lot of topics. And we've been talking about kind of the narrative as when we say the gun debate, what do we really mean and what issues really stick out to us? But I want to shift a little bit now, because to me, there's a very, very serious problem with this. And that is with many things, with many, many things that plague our modern world. We only talk about them seriously when they're pressing, breaking, huge, huge news stories. And then the next thing happens, whether that is another terrible, tragic event or it's a Kardashian or whatever, the next news thing happens and we get away from it before we make any meaningful progress on that topic. And I think mass shootings are no exception. That is when we talk about this, when we have someone busting into a public space and shooting innocent people, whether that is a school or a shopping center or whatever. And many problems emerge from that. Number one, we're not getting anywhere. We're not fostering meaningful dialogue. We just go, oh my God, we got to do something. We got to do something. When are we going to do something? And then we don't. But another thing is that that's the only time we're talking about it. But in fact, if we look at data, it is not where most of the fatalities and injuries from guns actually arise. The highest group is suicides. Most of the gun fatalities are self-inflicted. The group after that is homicide. That's where we see the Monday morning, you know, reports about everything that happened over the weekend where people were shooting each other. Here in Chicago, it is a big problem. I think another issue that arises in this, and we touched on this a little bit in the first hour, is that when we talk about, I don't want to say the word every day because it sounds like I'm dismissing it, but as opposed to a mass shooting that's a large, large sensational event, the everyday type of shooting, the regular gun violence that we see in our communities quickly becomes about something other than guns. Chicago, like it or not, is a very segregated city. It's designed that way. It's built that way. And if we look at a map, it's very obvious that that is the case. And so quickly, when a lot of times gun violence is occurring in higher levels in lower income urban areas. And so a lot of people feel like if I don't see it in front of me, it's not an issue. And so if people are not talking about it, it's very hard for law enforcement or lawmakers to also talk about it. And so it's very, very fraught. So I want to kind of unpack all that because it's so complicated and there's so much to it, really. Because when we talk about mass shootings, that's really just a small, small piece of this.
So digging into that and referring back to slightly on the political side, when you talk about the fact that mass shootings are so sensationalized, everybody sees them and they're so visible, politicians glom onto that. They focus on that point. But if you dig into the first two categories that you just mentioned, number one, suicides. number two, homicides, but let's talk about what those homicides actually are. When you look at the types of homicides by category, the number one is what you would call an emotionally driven type of shooting, a family incident, something where somebody gets drunk, domestic dispute, someone gets shot, a child, a spouse, under those circumstances that were completely non-premeditated. If you take a look at
the crime of passion,
the crime of passion, exactly. So, you know, the politicians get involved and they start to solve the wrong problem, because the first two categories are a preponderance of the issue. It's because the guns, you have quick access to them. You run into the house, you're having a completely horrible day, and you do something rash. That drives the suicides. I was reading some statistics about in Israel, the one of the higher numbers of suicides were actually by guns, self-inflicted wounds, and self-inflicted suicide by soldiers who were allowed to bring their service weapons home on the weekends. When they stopped that policy, the suicides actually dropped.
Interesting. Mm. Interesting. And I think, too, part of the reason we don't include suicides in that is there's still such a stigma around that. Even though we talk about it, we have 5Ks, we have so many public events around suicide, there is still such a stigma that somehow it's, you know, the surviving family member's fault. I should have done more. I should have, or there was something wrong with this person. You know, we say mental illness a lot, which I kind of want to challenge that, because we say that a lot. We say that a lot with mass shootings. We say that with suicide. I mean, this is a tangent for another day, really, but we don't say physical illness, because physical illness could mean anything from the sniffles to cancer, right? And that's a lot of things. That's a brief bout of postpartum depression all the way to, you know, a completely unchecked bipolar disorder or something, right? There's a lot of things that can mean, and I think it further stigmatizes mental illness when we say so-and-so had a mental illness. I think that's in and of itself a problem, but we will solve that part another day. Gerard, you're over here feverishly writing notes. What would you add to this?
You know,
the narratives around all
this? Yeah, it just goes back to the soul of man and the things I was writing down. You know, yes, what you just mentioned, interpersonal conflict, of course, suicide, immediate anger and vengeance. I think a lot of times these come from people not truly feeling whole about themselves. I there's a gap in my life. There's some sort of spiritual missing component. And if I get angry, I have to lash out. If I no longer feel whole or worthy, I may contemplate suicide. If the closest person around me upsets me, I may have to have an interpersonal conflict with that person. And you add a firearm to that powder keg, definitely, no pun intended, some bad things can happen. You know, really? And that's what's the most frustrating thing about the freedom of the United States. It's beautiful living in the United States. I love the United States, but some of our freedoms are so free that there's a component of freedom that can hurt you, you know.
Certainly.
That's what frustrates me.
Certainly.
You know, you look at the two, there was a 17-year-old and 18-year-old African-American young man who killed my parents. So they were armed, home invasion. One of the young men knew my parents. He used to cut my parents' grass, but he turned to the dark side. He became a black gangster disciple. 1 week before they killed my parents, both of them got ABK tattoos, anybody killer. So here's a young man who once was cutting grass for money, feels he has to roll up on my folks. What did they get at the end of the day? They got $70 from my parents and some jewelry. They stole my parents' Cadillac, went for a joyride for 2 or 3 days, car ran out of gas on the damn Ryan Expressway. Yeah, for what? Really? So, well, that's the soul of man. There was a missing component there. There were people around those 17 and 18-year-olds fostering that behavior. That's problematic. You know, you could talk about gang banging all day long, but where are the black men in some of these tired communities who are going to stand up and be responsible for the souls of the 16 to 24 year old black men who are killing everybody? That's the soul of man. That's a spiritual and moral component. And that's the thing that a lot of these black ministers out here are totally ignoring. They just want a headline on the news.
Fair enough. And I think, too, and we got to take a break here in a second, but I think, too, when we think about the term speaking out, I think a lot of times what we do is we feel passionately about something. We put it on Facebook and we feel that we've done something that makes a difference. And sometimes all you've done is just shown your friends what you think. Yep. And I think we get into a bit of slacktivism, as I like to call it, where we're not actually doing anything useful. We're just pontificating into the void. And so I would encourage people, every time I see somebody just kind of dumping passion out into nothing, and it's fine to speak out against things, and it's fine to tell your friends what you think and take a stand on an issue, and I think we all should, but I would encourage everybody to couple that with action, with real action. All right, we've got to take a little break, but we're going to continue this conversation. We're talking all about guns, and when we come back here on 720 WGN. WGN. It's Amy Guth here on the Saturday Night Special. Tonight, the big topic that we are jumping into is all about guns, the narrative around gun violence, the narrative around the great gun debate, quote unquote, and the way we talk about mass shootings, the way we talk about homicide, the way we talk about suicide, all of these very complicated issues. Because, you know, as I was telling people I was going to talk about this topic tonight, people would cringe and say, that's so polarizing. But in fact, it's a lot more nuanced than I think we're willing to give it credit for. And so I'm here with Joe O'Sullivan, who is a former police commander, Damani Bowden, who is a spokesperson for Mothers Against Senseless Killing, Andy McIntosh, who's the co-founder of Salt Supply. You could find out about that at saltsupply.com, and Dr. Gerard McLennan, who is the host of Counterpoint with Lakeshore Public TV. And we're talking all about this issue tonight. And I want to read something that was in a story at Vox, and you can find this at vox.com. As we talk about not so much the mass shootings, but we've been talking about kind of the different narratives and how when we only talk about gun issues as it's connected to mass shootings, we miss some really critical conversations. But the story in Vox says, a more charitable explanation is that the more typical kind of gun violence invokes more complicated problems. While it's easy to immediately associate a mass shooting with access to guns and somewhat incorrectly mental health issues, a shooting in a poor black community raises all sorts of systemic issues with long, complicated histories, residential segregation, economic inequality, racial disparities in the criminal justice system and education, and so on. It's a lot harder to explain how to solve these many problems than it is to simply suggest less access to guns and more access to mental health care services, which I think is a really important point to make because as we were saying earlier in the show, when there is a mass shooting, that's the only time we're talking about this mostly, other than when presidential campaigns are running and start to politicize things. But we talk about this and then it goes away again. And we're not talking about the day in, the day out, the headlines that we're all seeing. So we jumped into this topic a bit, but I want to hear from Joe, the kind of the law enforcement perspective. And Damani, I want to hear from you too about the work that your organization is doing in the community. Joe, let's start with you.
Well, traditionally, and I'll say law enforcement perspective, but just largely a more conservative perspective has always been the solution to these things is generally more enforcement. And I was a youth officer in the early 90s, and we were talking on the break about like the term super predator, and when we saw the rise in crack cocaine use and the rise in violence. And like I talk to younger people now, don't remember that in Chicago in the early 90s, there were more than 900 people a year getting murdered. And it just seemed like we were going to be awash in decades of violence. And all of these, the different states that enacted three strikes laws, all of the these truth and sentencing things passed with the idea that we were going to break this rise in crime. And in fact, you know, the murder rate's been declining since 1993, but the incarceration rate has still kept climbing. And it's one of the things that I think we need to look at, because there's all sorts of evidence that, like the community type projects that Damani is working on, those are the things that work long term, the ceasefire type projects, the sort of neighborhood intervention. But that takes a lot of effort and a lot of political willpower. And it's just easier for a lot of people to think, well, no, we need to get tough on crime. We need to lock people up.
You know, I like to toot our horn, going off of what you said. One thing is, the great thing about what we do is we don't need political affiliations mm-hmm. to do what we do. We don't need a lot of support from outside organizations. We just need people who are committed to go out, to take a term from politicians, get boots on the ground, and you know, make it happen. I hate to blame conservatives for everything that's going on as far as like mass incarceration, mm-hmm. Inequalities and all different types of life. Bill Clinton has been one of the most notorious persons in our recent political history when it comes to locking up people or getting tough on crime, which disproportionately affected black communities. Politicians aren't the answer. You know, they have knee-jerk reactions to problems that, like you said, are going to take a long time to fix. And taking an entire generation of men out of households does not fix a problem, because now we're dealing with those children who grew up without a stable home to live in, and they're crying out for help more so than anything. I think we have some RICO laws going on now in Chicago that have been enacted in the last couple of years that have, affected black communities way more than we think they should have. We still have broken families. So again, getting back to a more grassroots operation like we have, that Tamar Manasseh, of course, has started.
And what's great about your organization is that it's not, you know, it's not a ton of overhead. It's really just people being in the community.
It's people
which
just
is really
getting out there and helping and spending. It's time. It is commitment. It does take work. I spent many, 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 many days out there during the summer, hot, cold, raining, whether it was windy or whatever. But it works. Mm-hmm. It works. And all of these people who are so passionate about violence in Chicago, I say, well, come on out. You know, if you're really that passionate, you know, instead of wagging your finger, you know, come out and assist in the efforts.
Indeed.
Those laws are killing us. So we need to move from that to something that definitely works.
Indeed. All right, my friends, we're going to take a little break and get you to news. But when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation all about guns and the issues it brings up. And some of them are very, very complex, more than we can solve tonight. But we're doing the first thing, and that is talking about them and finding common ground among all of these issues and challenging people to do something about it rather than just pontificate. We'll be right back in just a bit on 720 WGN. WGN. 720 WGN. This is the Saturday Night Special. Thanks so much for being with us tonight. I'm Amy Guth. We are talking all about guns tonight and the narratives around them, the issues it brings up, the debates, the fights, the screaming, all of that stuff. We're not doing any of that here. We're having a really thoughtful discussion. And I've convened a panel of people who bring a lot of different points of view to this conversation. I'm here with Damani Bowden, who is the spokesperson for MASC, which is Mothers Against Senseless Killing. I'm here with Joe Sullivan, who is a retired police commander and former blogger, and Andy McIntosh, who is co-founder of Salt Supply, which, if you are not familiar, it is a home defense product that is not going to kill you, but it will stop an intruder. So there's interesting stuff to read at that website, saltsupply.com. And Dr. Gerard McLennan is here. You know him, Emmy Award-winning host of Counterpoint on Lakeshore Public TV. And we are talking all about these issues. And indeed, everybody in the room brings a lot of stories and filters to this very thoughtful conversation that we're having. And we have so much to get to, so if you have called or sent a text, I apologize if we have not gotten to you, but indeed there's so much to talk about and so many good points of view in the room that I want to honor all of them. But when an 815 texter wants to know that with Salt Supply, if the intruder is wearing like a ski mask, will the product still be effective? Actually, Andy, I would throw that to you.
Yeah, actually it will be effective. It affects the mucous membrane, so if you inhale or you get this substance in your eyes. I've been shot with this thing.
It's like being maced, right?
Oh, yeah. It's like being maced. The other thing is, you can mace somebody from 150 feet away. So I've been hit with this thing. I've been hit with the raw capsule.
On purpose? As a testing thing?
Testing. It was a testing process. We actually went through multiple iterations of rounds. We found the one that was the most effective on both the eyes and the lungs. And, I mean, this stuff knocked me out for 15, 20 minutes. I was coughing. I felt like I was going to puke. My eyes, I couldn't open them for 15 minutes.
So it would stop a home intruder for sure.
Absolutely.
All right. Very good. All right. So there's your answer for that. Texter from the 815 area code. All right. So we've been talking about in this hour the narratives around around guns. And there was a caller that we could not get to, but suggested that maybe it's not a gun problem. It's a culture problem. And I think that we've been talking about that. I think that we have been kind of hinting at that, if we haven't outright said it, really, that it's certainly, Gerard, you have certainly said that we're talking about, you know, the phrase that you've been using is the soul of man is gone. And what you said at the beginning of the show was very powerful, that even if we took guns away, there's still going to be violence.
Yeah.
That there's still going to be, you know, acts of ill will.
You know, I'm a big Sting and the Police fan from back in the day. Love the Police. And man, when they wrote that song, Spirits in the Material World, people don't realize that, you know, you're not a walking body. I mean, you're a spirit. You know, the spirit of the creator is within you, you know. And so I love the lyrics because he says there's no political solution to our troubled evolution. He says no faith in constitution. There's no bloody revolution. We are spirits in the material world. Sting continues by saying our so-called leaders speak with words. They try to jail you. They subjugate the meek, but it's the rhetoric of failure. See, when you look at a trauma center. These are decisions being made. When you look at a trauma center in Chicago being furthest from the neighborhoods who need them most, that is a decision that's being made. We need to teach people how serious it is to murder someone. You need to do that in the home, do that in schools, and we need to do that in media. We're just as responsible here. In the United States, you'll see people killed all day on TV and in film. But on TV in this country, we shy away from showing a couple making love. In Europe, it's the opposite.
Sure.
So we don't have a problem with seeing someone take a life, but we have a big problem with seeing someone make a life. That's problematic to me. And when you look at what gun violence and what a human being is really worth, these are some of the questions we ask in the documentary that I shot last year. Can you forgive a murder? And what's the cost of murder? So Apple's revenue is $104 billion a year. Obesity costs $224 billion a year in the United States. Healthcare, $251 billion a year. But what's the cost of gun violence in the United States? And you haven't heard one politician talk about this. What's the cost of gun violence in the U.S.? $229 billion. You think we could solve some problems with that money? Yes, we could, but that's not in the conversation of our so-called leaders. That's problematic.
Well, you bring up exactly what I want to talk about next, and that is, what is the conversation missing? What is not happening in the narrative? Because I think that's really going to be the key to having a more constructive dialogue. You know, in fact, it's not that polarizing, really. What we tend to do is we say it's really polarizing because we say anecdotally that you're either pro-gun or anti-gun in the end. Not a lot of people fit into absolutes in anything. When we're talking about anything, not a lot of people fit into absolutes. As we're sitting here, although the five of us bring very different life experiences and points of view to this conversation, we're here having very good conversation, I think, I would say, right? And that's thoughtful and respectful, and that is very constructive. And I think that if we approach bigger conversations in such a way, we're still going to have that common ground. We're still going to find those places. So I think it's not as polarizing as we think.